This is the best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Welcome in, Geico Outkick Studios, Friday edition. Oh my goodness. Every time I think the Dallas Cowboys have hit rock bottom, it turns out I'm wrong and they're going to hit a new lower level. And that happened last night if you were watching them on the road in Chicago. Now, I understand that Bear fans may be sitting around saying, hey, why in the world is the storyline here about the Dallas Cowboys and not about the Chicago Bears? We're the team that went out, dominated, took control of this game, never really were in doubt for the entire second half that we were going to win. Mitch Trubisky performed at a fairly high level, 3 touchdown passes, very solid passer rating. Why in the world is everybody talking about the Dallas Cowboys? And I'll tell you why the answer is everybody's talking about the Dallas Cowboys, because this was a team that early in the year felt like they could be one of the NFC Super Bowl contenders. Never really this year has anybody thought, oh, you know what? Those Chicago Bears, they are an incredible team. I feel like they could have a really good run in the postseason. But with Dak and Zeke and Amari Cooper all coming together, a defense that looked special at times, this felt like a year where Jerry Jones could have the Dallas Cowboys back in contention to make a run in the postseason. And I understand that because of the NFL's ridiculous rules associated with division champs getting automatic playoff bids, as well as even more ridiculously automatic home playoff games, that the Dallas Cowboys still have a chance to make the postseason and still have a chance to win as well. But the truth of the matter is this: no one in the NFC East deserves to make the postseason. No one in the NFC East deserves to make the playoffs. Not the Philadelphia Eagles, not the Dallas Cowboys, certainly not the Giants, and certainly not the Washington Redskins. All of these teams are completely awful this year. But the Dallas Cowboys have the most at stake now as we go forward. As a preliminary, I don't understand how in the world you keep Jason Garrett on as your coach at this point in time. I understand that Jerry Jones has said that basically through media sources, he doesn't want to make a move until the season is over. I don't really understand how you stick with Jason Garrett at this point in time as you come down the stretch run of the season. At this point, the Cowboys are now 6-7. And I know that also the Eagles are not very good and just are coming off of a beatdown that they took at the hands of the Miami Dolphins. But let's focus on the Cowboys here for a minute. They play the Rams next week. The Rams are right now, even though the Rams aren't having a very good season, I think an infinitely better team than the Dallas Cowboys. And in fact, the Rams are the kind of team that the Cowboys haven't beaten all year. And by kind of team that the Cowboys haven't beaten all year, I mean they have a winning record. So you've got the Rams, then you go on the road against the Eagles, then you finish with the Redskins. I don't know about y'all, but the only team I really feel comfortable on those three that the Cowboys are going to beat are the Redskins. I don't know what the win total is going to end up being in the NFC East, but I do feel like 8-8 might very well win this division. And it could be possible that the winning team in this division has a losing record, because we still haven't managed to eliminate the Washington Redskins from playoff contention. But if you look going forward now, the Eagles should surely beat the Giants. If that happens, these two teams are going to be even at 6-7. Then the Eagles go on the road against the Redskins. I feel good about that being a win. So it's possible that the Eagles have a chance to eliminate the Cowboys from playoff contention in a couple of weeks in Philadelphia when the Cowboys have to go on the road. And if you're looking at that and you are Jerry Jones and you are sitting around saying, I know that I told everyone that we weren't going to make a move with Jason Garrett during the season, is there anyone that you believe is on the coaching staff right now that could rally this team and lead them to some form of success? Because if there is, it's time to break the glass. It's time to go ahead and pull the fire alarm. The Dallas Cowboys are an unmitigated disaster right now. And partly this is enjoyable for sports fans, right? If you're not a Cowboy fan, you enjoy watching Cowboy fans suffer because there's so much team interest out there for America's team, if you want to put that in quotation marks. People watch the Cowboys. They enjoy the drama. But this is an ugly, ugly situation going on right now with the Dallas Cowboys because it feels like they don't have any confidence whatsoever in their head coach. It feels like Jason Garrett, who's never been particularly beloved by his team or by the Dallas Cowboy fan base, doesn't really have their full attention anymore. If you listen to the games, Troy Aikman clearly doesn't have Jason Garrett's back, and he's been calling a lot of Cowboys games for years. And just look at the results down the stretch here. Cowboys can't show up on the road against the Patriots, they lose. They don't show up against the Bills, they lose. And now they don't show up against the Bears, and they lose as well. That's three straight defeats, four out of the last five games, the only win coming against the Lions. And the Lions are a shell of a team that really can't beat anybody right now. So this is full-on panic time for the Dallas Cowboys. I'm usually the guy who says, you know what, let's hit the pause button here. In the grand scheme of things, that's a long NFL season. You can't overreact to any one game. And I still feel that way. But can you overreact to a five-game stretch where you only win one game and you lose to the Vikings and you lose to the Patriots and you lose to the Bills and then you top it all off by losing to the Bears? I don't think you can overreact. And I think the big challenge going forward is, what in the world's happened with the Cowboys? What do you do with Dak Prescott? Are you going to give him a massive contract? Are you going to give Amari Cooper a massive contract? Or are you filled with trepidation over that decision based on what you've seen in the last 5 weeks? I don't understand how, if you're a Cowboy fan, you can be very comfortable giving a contract extension to anybody. In fact, if I'm a Cowboy fan, I want to go back and take away Ezekiel Elliott's contract extension as well, because he certainly hasn't earned it. And to lose to this Bear team, a Bear team that the city of Chicago has completely written off, a Bear team that is so despised in general by Bear fans, with a quarterback in Mitch Trubisky who is so in disfavor right now, that when a kid dressed up as Mitch Trubisky for Halloween and they put him on the Jumbotron, everybody booed the poor kid because people are so fed up with Mitch Trubisky. To allow, with a defense that you thought was pretty stout, Mitch Trubisky to go out and just run roughshod all over you, this is a tough game to get past. Again, I said I keep thinking the Dallas Cowboys have hit rock bottom, but at least against the Buffalo Bills, you could say, okay, the Bills are a pretty decent team. They've won eight games. They won a ninth game against us. You could even say that about the Vikings. You could certainly say it about a lot of the teams that the Cowboys have lost to so far. Even though they can't beat any decent teams, you could look at them and say, hey, it's the Patriots. Nobody goes into Foxborough and wins. You could say about the Vikings game when you lost, hey, you know what? We just didn't play very well down the stretch. That's on us. We can do better. You could say about the Bills, like I said, they've won eight games. They won their ninth on us, but nobody can say anything positive about the Bears, except maybe Mitch Trubisky's mom. And you allowed Mitch Trubisky to go out and completely dominate you, to post one of his best performances of the year by far. Three touchdowns, a 115 passer rating, 23 out of 31. He threw one bad interception all day. And the defense was supposed to be the strength of your team. I just, you know, Jason Garrett's not talking about his job security. Jerry Jones dancing around everything. I just don't know how there's any way that you can believe that the Dallas Cowboys deserve, as they're presently constituted, to finish out the season with Jason Garrett as their coach. It seems clear to me that they have quit on him, that whatever motivational tactics he is attempting to employ are no longer working. And we're going to talk all about this later, but I'm also fired up about the idea of the NFL allowing either the Cowboys or the Eagles to be a division winner and be able to host a home playoff game. If you have been watching the Cowboys and the Eagles play, that is an absolute embarrassment of football that either of these teams gets to host a home playoff game. But the bigger issue going forward is, what are the Cowboys going to do as they get ready for a game against the Rams and following that, a game on the road against the Eagles? Guys, it's possible if the Eagles play decently the next couple of weeks that the Eagles could take complete control of this division and the Dallas Cowboys could fade into total obsolescence this year in a season where many of you, myself included, thought, based on the way this season had begun, that the Cowboys were finally going to be a Super Bowl contending team. I can't imagine for Jerry Jones this feels very good because he's an aging guy, and I feel like he doesn't want to make dramatic changes to his team because he knows Jerry Jones does very well, Jason Garrett, and I think he believes that he's capable of taking this team to a special run, but it certainly is not happening now, and I think it's almost time to rip the Band-Aid off and just say, Jason Garrett can't be the coach of the Cowboys anymore. And then that leads into the question of, is there anybody out there that you feel confident on this coaching staff would be able to get better performance out of this team? Because right now, it's a fundamentally broken franchise and a fundamentally broken team, and it doesn't feel like they believe that Jerry Jones does or that any of the brain trust does that Jason Garrett can manage to lead this team anywhere at all. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but right now, I think I'd have to bet on the Eagles to win this division. I don't see how anybody could bet on the Cowboys, and I'm betting on the Eagles not because I think they're any good. They just lost to the freaking Miami Dolphins, but because I think they're going to beat the Giants, and then I think they have a really good chance of beating the Cowboys at home to effectively win this division. Especially, man, when you think about the fact that the Cowboys have to get ready now for the Rams, and do you feel good about the Cowboys beating the Rams? I don't. And the Eagles get two pretty winnable games where they could put it all away and not have to worry at all about what happens in the final week of the season. The Eagles surely can beat the Giants and the Redskins and be in first place when the Cowboys come to town. What an unbelievable and ridiculous direction this has all gone in for the Cowboys.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick, the coverage with Clay Travis, weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific, on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
We are joined now by Jason Martin, and Jason Martin is with me on the show this morning because if you listen to yesterday's show, Danny G won a trip to Disneyland. No, he is not like a 8-year-old boy who got to travel all over the country to go to Disneyland. He is a 40-plus-year-old man with no children of his own who missed 2 days of work yesterday and today so that he could be at Disneyland. I think they were open till 1 a.m. I guess right now it is 3:45 roughly in the morning on the West Coast. Jason Martin, do you think that that Danny G is still awake?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't know. I don't know. See, I don't know what Danny did when he was here for my wedding. Like, I'm not sure how he rolled. I'm not sure how long he was out. I'm not sure at his age. I don't know if he's all talk or if there's actually walk behind that. Like, I don't know if he hung out in the cantina long enough to have gotten lubed up to the degree that he would still be asleep. I'm not so sure. Plus, you know this, Clay. Our clocks work differently when we're doing these morning shows as long as we have.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard for me to believe he's even asleep on a day he should be at work because I think also there's a guilt inside of his brain that says I should probably be at work. And so he's awake right now.
I feel bad calling him because we called him twice yesterday and I told him, all right, you know, we called you twice and woke you up. So I'm going to let you actually have your day off at Disneyland. But come Monday, I'm going to definitely let you have it for taking 2 days off in the middle of football season for Disneyland. All right, so speaking of Disneyland, Disneyland has a brand, right? Like there is a strong associational value with the Disney brand. If you're a parent, you think when you see the Disney logo, okay, this is a show I can let my kids watch. You take your kids to Disney. You have something to value Disney over and above what your experience with Disney might be, and that's called the brand, right? Like, that is the brand value. I think we're in an intriguing place right now with college football as we enter into the Pac-12 title game tonight between Utah and Oregon. And I think in particular, Utah is a victim of their own brand, and in particular, the bigger brands of other college football teams. For instance, Paul Feinbaum, who has a great interview with me on the Wins and Losses podcast. If you haven't downloaded the Wins and Losses podcast, I think you'll really enjoy it. Went on ESPN and said nobody wants to watch Utah play because they don't care about Utah football. That's almost entirely a brand-based analysis and diagnosis and discussion. It has nothing to do with what they've actually done on the field this year. It just has to do with the fact that the vast majority of people listening to us right now on the East Coast, because it's an East Coast morning right now, have not really spent much time watching Utah play. Now, that's different somewhat for you and I because we stay up late. We watch a lot of college football games in general. But the question that I asked Lance Taylor in the last segment and that I want to ask you now, Jason Martin, is if you just removed the name Utah and everything about Utah's resume was pretty much the exact same except they were USC or they were Oregon, who I think are right now the two biggest brands on the West Coast. Do those two schools get in? Because I would make the argument, if this is USC and they are 11-1 playing to go to 12-1 and they've lost one game and it was when their best player arguably was out for that game on a Friday night and it happened back in September, I think that USC would be in like easily as long as they beat Oregon. And I also feel the same way about Oregon based on the brand associational value they have, the connection to Nike, and the fact that people believe that Oregon is good, like people believe that historically USC is good in a way that they don't believe that about Utah. And do you buy into that, that branding is a big hit for Utah here, particularly if they end up going up against Oklahoma, which has a big brand historically in college football?
Absolutely. I said it on my show on Sunday morning here on Fox Sports Radio. Said the exact same thing. Said Utah's name is what's going to hurt Utah.
Yeah.
Utah looks the part. Their defense is unbelievable. Hundley's the best player in the country that no one ever seems to talk about. A lot of people have not gotten a chance to see them play. But there is one difference between college football and the NFL that I don't like on the side of college. And that is that it can be subjective. It's not just the numbers. It's not the head-to-heads. It's not like you're going to know who's in the playoffs based on what they've done on the field. There's no subjectivity to it. There's no opinion to it. Here, it matters. Here, Oregon's name is much bigger than Utah's name. USC is way bigger than both of them. And Oklahoma is arguably bigger than all three of the others. So you look at all of this and you say, what are humans going to do? And I just feel like, even though I disagree with Finebaum in that, or I don't disagree with him, I think that he's probably right in what he's saying about a lot of people. I want to see Utah get a shot because I want to see what they can actually do. This is, I know they lost a game, but you explained it very well. They were missing their best player. It was on the road against a pretty good USC team, as we've tended to find out as we've gotten down the stretch of this season. And still, they're not going to get that opportunity simply because they're Utah. This is, if you look at the Central Florida argument when they were undefeated, they were not in a conference where it was going to help them out. Here, you have a one-loss team that's barely got one loss that it seems like, let's see if we can find a way to keep them out. You just think of humans and you don't trust humans to go with the little guy. And unfortunately for Utah, they're the little guy. Remember when Boise and TCU both got in and they put them against each other?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you guys go over here. Like, we don't need that situation where Boise State beat Oklahoma. We don't need to see that again.
We're going to put you at the little kid's
exactly. table. And I think Utah, unfortunately, is kind of there, despite the fact that they've been good for a while, and Kyle Whittingham's one of the most underrated coaches in the country.
It is interesting to think about the way this is all going to shake out. And to me, the bigger picture question here, and this is something that I think the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and their commissioners have failed their respective leagues on, those conferences should be beating the table like insane people to argue for an 18 playoff with automatic bids for each conference champ. Because this was a self-evident problem that could arise. And again, if Georgia wins, all this talk about Utah versus Oklahoma versus Baylor is going to disappear because neither the Pac-12 nor the Big 12 are going to get teams into the college football playoff. And so to me, the storyline here that deserves more attention and has not received it so far is why are the Pac-12 and the Big 12 not aggressively arguing that they need a playoff expansion? Because if you expanded the playoff and took the five conference champions and then three wild cards or two wild cards with kind of a possibility of a team from outside the Power Five being able to get in if they fulfilled certain playoff requirements, maybe finish in the top 15, maybe finish in the top 12, whatever that number would be, then I think that the conferences overall would be strengthened tremendously. And especially for the Big 12, which kind of lives in this perpetual fear of realignment over the last decade or so, if you told Texas and Oklahoma, hey, you can stay in a 10-team conference and you know that you are guaranteed a playoff bid every single year, Texas and Oklahoma would have to be ecstatic about that. I'm not saying that they would win it every year, but I feel like 70% of the time, at least, the Big 12's representative would be either Texas or Oklahoma. So why would they ever consider leaving the Big 12 if they had that opportunity? And I think the same thing holds for the Pac-12. If you're worried about West Coast football, we're going to talk some about this with Petros Papadakis, by the way, in hour three. If you're worried a little bit about West Coast college football slipping under the radar and becoming an inferior product because of the Pac-12, the best way to change that that sort of narrative is to get your teams into the playoff and be able to compete at the highest level with teams from the SEC, the Big Ten, and right now Clemson from the ACC. So this is a no-brainer to me. But I do think that the College Football Playoff Committee is in an intriguing spot here because justice in college football is not necessarily blind. There is a brand and associational value attached here in a big way, and I wonder whether those College Football Playoff Committee members are going to be able to, in the back of their mind, take away the, hey, this is Oklahoma, hey, this is Utah. The brand awareness here is not equal. Also, I'm kind of intrigued. I know this is a television product for entertainment, and Feinbaum saying nobody wants to watch them on television. How much more money is at stake if Oklahoma gets in versus if Utah gets in? I think that's an intriguing question, too, because people say, oh, we like the underdog, but all of the data reflects that people enjoy watching the favorites. They want to watch the superstar team. They want to watch the superstar players. If March Madness ended up with 4-11 seeds in the Final Four, nobody would watch. People want Duke. They want Kentucky. They want North Carolina. They want the big national brands that you've grown up watching on the biggest possible stages. That's what the data shows us over and over and over again. But this is going to be a big debate. I'm sure we'll still be talking about it on Monday, who gets in, particularly, again, if Georgia ends up losing to LSU. When we come back, Alex Marvez is going to join us in hour two. We're going to dive back into what we saw last night, but between the Cowboys and the Bears, what did we learn, if anything, from both of those teams? This is Outkick the Coverage. I appreciate you all listening to us here on Fox Sports Radio.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.
Welcome in. Hour number two, Outkick the Coverage, Friday edition. I hope wherever you are across the country or around the world, you are having a fantastic early start to your weekend by listening to us. We've had a lot of fun, loaded show for you coming in your direction. We already talked with Lance Taylor. If you're out there and you're curious about what happened in hour one, you need to subscribe to the podcast. A lot of you out there making the podcast more and more popular every single month. October was the most popular month ever, followed by November is the most popular month. We're growing pretty fast there, and I guarantee you, you will be entertained and hopefully learn a little bit every single hour of this show, so make sure you don't miss anything. And you probably don't want to miss anything unless you're a Dallas Cowboy fan, because last night you might well have wanted to miss that game, and you might be groaning a little bit as you're on your way to work right now, and you're listening to me talk about what you saw last night, which was a complete and total failure. I said in hour one, every time I think the Dallas Cowboys have hit rock bottom, they go further under the ground. And I don't understand how this is possible. The talent on this team is way in excess of the performance that we have seen in the last several weeks. The Cowboys have been unable to handle any kind of team with a decent talent on it, offense and defense-wise. And at least early on, you could make excuses for what you were seeing. And I'll tell you, because I kind of made excuses for what I was seeing. When the Cowboys went on the road and they couldn't get the win over the Patriots, everybody, myself included, a few weeks ago said, you know what? Not very many teams are able to go on the road in Foxborough and win. And so you're willing to forgive that performance. When the Cowboys lost to the Vikings a couple of weeks before that, a lot of people were willing to forgive that performance because they said, man, that was just awful play calling down the stretch. Why did the Cowboys decide to run Ezekiel Elliott? Why did they try to throw the ball to Ezekiel Elliott? They should have won that game. They kind of gave it away to the Vikings. That was the general consensus. You don't beat the Patriots on the road because nobody really beats the Patriots on the road in Foxborough, especially when it's a cold, wet, rainy sort of situation that they seem to thrive in New England. And then the Bills came into town on Thanksgiving, and they took it to the Cowboys, but at least you could sit back and say, well, the Bills are 9-3. Maybe they're a better team than we thought. The Bears are not good. They are not a better team than anybody thought. They are a thoroughly average team in the NFL. And if you are a playoff contending team, if you're a team that believes it can win games in the postseason, you have to win this game. And at this point in time, I understand Jerry Jones' reluctance to replace Jason Garrett, primarily because I think he's sitting around saying, man, there's nobody that's that proven on this coaching staff that's going to do a better job than Jason Garrett is. And at least if I stick with Jason Garrett, the rest of this division is so bad. The Eagles are not very good, but at least we know that the Giants and the Redskins are awful. Surely we can get to 8-8 or 9-7 and win our division. And even if it's a disappointing season because this was a team we all thought early in the season could not just go to the playoffs but could make a run once we get there, at least we're still going to make the playoffs. And the only way I could screw that up is if I go ahead and I fire Jason Garrett. But I'm here to tell you, it feels like this team is not performing for Jason Garrett. And I almost think that the Cowboys need a massive jolt to be able to change the trajectory of their season. And sometimes the danger is if you go out there and you make that massive change, which would be entailed in firing Jason Garrett, sometimes the result is not positive, right? It can go in two different directions. That jolt can be the jolt of energy that suddenly sends the entire team into a different direction and everybody plays well, or it can be a jolt of we're now an obsolescent franchise. We have no chance to actually win. And I'm not sure which direction it would go with the Cowboys from this point forward. But what I can tell you is this is why I think the NFL, as good as it is broken when it gets to the postseason. Because this happens every now and then where a division is so bad, and with the Redskins being as awful as they are and the Giants being as awful as they are, it's almost impossible not to win at least four games in a division. And right now, it's crazy to me that the Dallas Cowboys, who were sitting at 6-7, or the Philadelphia Eagles, depending on who ends up winning this division, would have the right to host a 10-2, potentially even better than that record, could be a 14-2 San Francisco 49er team, because the 49ers have the unfortunate poor luck to be in the same division right now as the Seattle Seahawks, who were on fire. And again, the 49ers could go 14-2, I guess 13-3, because they still play one more game against the Seahawks, and potentially still not win this division because they are unfortunately in the same division as Russell Wilson. And worse than that, they potentially could have to go on the road and play against the Cowboys or the Eagles. It's just nonsensical that we're in this position right now where the Cowboys are this bad. Now, one of the reasons why I think the nation enjoys watching Cowboy fans suffer is because this team is so overcovered and overanalyzed that after every game, the Cowboys are either, if they win, headed to the Super Bowl, or if they lose, everything's a disaster. You got to fire the head coach. Dak's not the answer. Ezekiel Elliott's overpaid. There's a huge overreaction to everything that happens in the Cowboys universe. And that can be sometimes entertaining, but it can also be exhausting. And a big part of that is Jerry Jones. How many other owners have their own press conferences? How many other owners after games talk as often as Jerry Jones does? But I think the reason why Jerry Jones has stayed with Jason Garrett is because Jerry is aging and he feels comfortable with Jason Garrett and he doesn't necessarily want to have to build a relationship with a new head coach. And so I think Jerry is crushed over the way this season has gone and the fact that it seems pretty clear that the Cowboys are going to have to recalibrate their entire franchise. And honestly, with the way that they have played down the stretch, I question what they're going to be capable of doing in the offseason when they have to pay Dak Prescott and Amari Cooper such massive contracts to go along with what they pay Ezekiel Elliott. We're talking about such big contracts that it hamstrings the overall franchise's ability to make moves in other directions. And so it's wild, but a part of me right now is sitting around saying, if you had to buy stock in either the Chicago Bears or the Dallas Cowboys right now, who would you take? I think I'd go buy stock in the Chicago Bears. I don't think the Bears are good. I'm certainly not a believer in Mitch Trubisky. But if you look at what they have down the horizon here, I don't think Mitch Trubisky is the answer, but he doesn't cost very much money. And with this quarterback market in the offseason, you have the potential to add an awful lot to your team without having to spend that much. Whereas the Cowboys, I think the tough thing if you're a Cowboy fan is they've missed their window. Their window was Dak Prescott almost costing no money at all. For 4 years, Dak Prescott was the most affordable starting quarterback who was solid in the entire NFL. I believe the total is $2.7 million that Dak Prescott made over the last 4 years. That is nothing for a starting quarterback in the NFL. And as a result, you had a quarterback who was worth $20 million plus making a fraction of that, and so you could redistribute that money to other playmakers, to other top talent, and be able to build around your guy. I mean, this is the same overall platform that we saw the Seattle Seahawks rise to one Super Bowl and almost win another Super Bowl. They found a later round draft pick in Russell Wilson, who didn't cost them very much money initially, and they took advantage of that window and were able to have tremendous success. Maybe the Baltimore Ravens are going to be able to do the same thing with Lamar Jackson. But if you're the Dallas Cowboys, you had Dak Prescott for 4 years. This is the fourth. And in the first 3 years, you got one playoff win out of him. I don't know what the solution here is, but I feel pretty confident that the Cowboys need to readjust everything that they're doing and that Jason Garrett is going to be the guy who takes all the blame here, even if he doesn't deserve all of it. And as a result, going forward, you just got a messy, messy situation. How much is Dak worth? Have you overpaid Zeke? What do you do with Amari Cooper? And do you have enough to limp your way to a division title here, particularly with the fact that now the Rams are coming to town, and the Rams played really well last week, and I feel like they're starting to come back into their own. I don't feel good about the Cowboys beating the Rams next week either, which would mean the Cowboys could be in a position where they can be eliminated from division title contention on the road against the Eagles in just a couple of weeks from now. So I think Jerry's got some really tough decisions to make going forward, and I think, frankly, it's absurd and ridiculous that anybody from the NFC East is going to be able to advance into the postseason, and God forbid they're going to get to host a home playoff game against potentially a way better team in the 5 seed in the NFC. Remember, the 49ers went from the 1 seed to the 5 seed in the space of one Monday Night Football game. It's crazy to me to think that the 49ers are going to have to go on the road to play against either the Cowboys or the Eagles based on how these teams have looked of late. Just absolutely ridiculous. I don't even feel comfortable predicting a winner of the NFC East because the Eagles were so god-awful against the Dolphins in their most recent game and because the Cowboys were just so god-awful last night against the Bears. It's just hard to have any faith in either of these teams at all.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
Petros Papadakis at the Old P, usually just on with us on Tuesday, but wanted to bring him on Friday as well. College football playoff season is here. Pac-12 title game is tonight, but more importantly, USC continues to be a dumpster fire. We talked about the decision on Clay Helton earlier this week with Petros. We've talked about it a lot on this show in general. But your take in general, succinctly delivered off the gate, out of the gates here, Petros, is what?
Well, bureaucracy won again at USC. Clay Helton charmed the new president, who apparently forced Mike Bone to fall on the sword, for lack of a better term, and keep Clay Helton, which is cheap but very expensive long term, because you don't get a bunch of Tennessee fans freaking out and storming the castle with pitchforks out here in LA. You just get a pestilence of apathy, and that's what it seems like USC football. I didn't think USC football or the Pac-12 could afford another year with Clay Helton. The statement written was very much like the statement Clay Helton wrote this year and last year, and the statement that Lynn Swann wrote last year when he decided to keep Clay Helton. And they're all written by the same guy. So it looks like the bureaucrats won again. I felt a lot like yesterday was the end of Animal Farm, where you hire these new people to make changes, and they just become exactly what you feared, which is part of the machine.
So why do you think...
Was that succinct enough?
Yeah, no, that was good, and that was erudite, and that was literary in nature, and so I think everybody's appreciating that. But do you buy into this idea that behind the scenes they're calling James Franklin, they're calling Matt Rhule, they're calling Urban Meyer?
Well, don't you?
Yeah, I do.
If that wasn't the case, why didn't you hire the guy? If you were going to keep Clay Helton, and he's a man of integrity, and that's why you're keeping him, and all the reasons that were tweeted out yesterday by the athletic director, Mike Bone, if you're doing that, then why not do it after you beat UCLA?
When
everybody feels good, why not do it after Utah wins the Pac-12 championship?
Pac-12 South. Yeah,
they clinched a berth in the Pac-12 championship game on Wednesday. Why not do it then? Why wait until a team meeting on Wednesday afternoon to finally make your decision? There was tremendous infighting. And I think the problem was they had it all lined up to pay all the money to a Bob Stoops or an Urban Meyer, and those guys wanted complete control. And USC, who hasn't hired a real coach in years, weren't willing to give that up. Of course they want complete control. Bob Stoops and Urban Meyer and these people, they don't come without complete control. Nick Saban, that's who you're hiring. That's who you are going to compete with at the highest level if you hire them. It's ridiculous to think that was ultimately the stumbling block. But
you think it was? You think it was about control?
That's one of the things I'm hearing. Yeah, but what you're going to hear now is just a bunch of PR status quo BS. People are going to talk about all of USC's lawsuits. People are going to talk about how they won eight games with a backup quarterback who's actually better than the starter. People are going to talk about, how Clay Helton dug out Sam Darnold, which he barely did, and Sam Darnold wasn't the starter until he was forced to have to start him or he was going to get fired. You're going to hear all these weird excuses. You're going to hear he's a great guy and all this stuff, all the BS that wasn't really going over that well last year. That's all coming out of, and people just start to regurgitate what the PR department tells you. I understand how it goes. But in USC's case, it's with their fan base, I think it's falling on some seriously deaf ears. People are just going to, how it is out here, Clay. People are going to go to the beach or they're going to go to the mountains and they're not going to be at the games. And games are worse attended than the games when I was a senior, which was a hapless team that Paul Hackett was fired as the coach from, like a 4-8 team. And their attendance is worse than that. And they just renovated the Coliseum.
I think that's the challenge that a lot of people, that USC should be smarter about, is you're in the entertainment capital of maybe the entire country, right? Just in terms of all the different options of things to do. You've also added now two NFL franchises, which are going to be moving into a new state-of-the-art stadium. You've got LeBron and Kawhi dueling in basketball. The Dodgers continue to be relevant on a high-end scale in terms of their overall ability. And if you, I think you hit on it, if you are an SC fan and if you judge, and I know using social media as an approximation is always difficult, but you have a pretty good pulse on the USC fan base. Do you believe that the response on social media is representative of the overall USC fan base as a whole, the people who aren't sitting around on social media all day long?
Well, there are people, you know, there's a blue check brigade on social media that protects the power.
Yeah.
So, not that it balances out because there's a tremendous amount of negativity.
I mean, if you just read the comments underneath the announcement on social media that Clay Helton is coming back, I mean, it's 95% negative, right? And I don't claim to be a great soothsayer of the USC fan base, but there are, where we work at Fox, a ton of USC people who are reasonable, diehard college football fans for their program. And none of them are happy about the way this has played out or the fact that Clay Helton is coming back.
No, it's more of the same. And to continue to do the same thing, I mean, this is the mistake that two other athletic directors have made. And their excuse was they weren't real athletic directors.
Right.
You know, their excuse was they were former football stars who were charading as athletic directors, and Pat Hayden and Lynn Swann. They both made a tremendous amount of mistakes. But the number one mistake that both guys made was Hayden hiring Clay Helton and Lynn Swann not only extending him, but giving them this ridiculous buyout. You know, that's one of the weird incongruities here. Sexton got Helton this unbelievable deal to where he's cheap year in and year out. I mean, he literally makes, you know, $7 million less than what you'd have to pay a real college football coach at a place like USC. And not only that, but when it comes to that amount of money, USC had to pay it. He has this ridiculous buyout,
yeah,
like a $20 million buyout. So he's cheap, but he has a $20 million buyout that Jimmy Sexton got him, that people worship Jimmy Sexton for, because if Jimmy could get that guy that deal, you know, just imagine what he could do for Ryan Day or somebody like that. It really is. I don't really root for USC, but we on the West Coast, we need USC to be relevant, for the rest of the programs to be relevant, and this is just another blow. You know, this sets them back not just one more year. This sets them back a lot more time than that. And you know, I don't know if a guy like Stoops or Urban Meyer or whoever, you know, who knows what Matt Rule's trajectory is, but I don't think a guy like that picks up the phone again for these people, because they clearly don't know how to negotiate. And, I mean, you can't make the same move that the two athletic directors before you made and are maligned for. And you can't do the exact same thing and expect some kind of different result. And I just really think it's a blow to West Coast football that's disillusioning and deflating and makes everybody flaccid, like you said, all the SC people around Flop Fox.
A depressed Petros Papadakis at the AM 570 LA Sports. All right, let's shift for a minute here. Pac-12 title game is tonight. Friday night's going to catch people by surprise, as it often does. Utah going up against Oregon. Utah around a 6-point favorite in this game. What do you expect to see?
You know, I expect Utah to dominate the game. That's what Utah's been doing. You know, Oregon is kind of like Oklahoma, but Oklahoma's pulled out the games. But, you know, Oregon has a game control problem. You know, not only are they unable to control games, but they did the unthinkable and lost to a kind of middling Arizona State team on the road. And a lot of people saw that coming. Like John Wilner and like 12 other people on the West Coast predicted that Oregon was going to lose that game like 5 days before they did. I mean, so what's wrong with Oregon, right? So there's something, you know, where their trajectory, and this happens to a football team. I think Justin Herbert should have come out last year. I think it's completely and totally obvious to everybody now. It's hurt his draft status staying in. It's the same thing that happened to Matt Barkley and Brett Hundley. The more tape on you, the more zits they're going to find on your game. You know, he's a first-read quarterback. He doesn't come off that first read very much. He doesn't have any spectacular comebacks or any great signature moments. He's surrounded by a lot of talented players, but Mario Cristobal gets a little tight down the stretch, And you saw it on the East Coast in the Auburn game to open the season.
Yeah.
Whereas Utah can compete on a level. I mean, I don't know if they'll make the college football playoff, but we talked about this. They can compete in the college football playoff because of their fronts, because of their quarterback, because of their tailback. And really their linebackers and safeties too, defense as a whole. So unless Utah is some kind of cursed team that can't handle the big moment, and we did see them lose at USC, I think Utah will dominate this game and finally get over the top and at least get to the Rose Bowl.
So if they dominate, and let's say Oklahoma also goes out and wins by 10 to 14 points, who gets in?
Gosh, you know, I hope it's Utah. But, I mean, how could you get upset if it's Oklahoma? You know,
do you think? Let me ask you this: if it were Oregon or USC, bigger national brands in terms of teams that people know. I know Paul Feinbaum went on ESPN and said nobody wants to see Utah. How much do you think brand value for Oklahoma factors in a matchup against Utah, or does the committee actually factor that in and ultimately overweight Utah because they're trying to prove that they're not biased based on the name on the front of the jersey? How do you think that weighs in here?
You know, that's an interesting question, and we really can't know, right, how they factor it in the committee, or if they overdo it on the other side because they don't want to be seen as label whores, so to speak. If it was between SC and Oregon, that's a tough call because Oregon has a lot of ties to ESPN and they've done a lot of business over the years.
Yep.
And they have the Nike thing. You know, Mariota would never have been able to win the Heisman if he was the exact same player at Oregon State.
Right.
You know, it's because of Nike. I mean, that would be a tough call. That's a coin flip. I punt on that one because USC is a blue blood that gets everybody's attention in the country. All the old people remember Marcus Allen and such, and younger people remember Matt Leinart, Lindale White, and Reggie Bush. So that's a coin flip. But as far as Oklahoma and Utah, I really, you know, we've seen Oklahoma compete in the playoff, just like we've seen Clemson compete in the playoff. It's kind of the opposite, right? Clemson really kicks ass. Oklahoma doesn't. I think that argument, just the past, I don't know if that should factor in, but I would like it to because I would really like to see Utah compete at that level and see what they can do because I'm a biased West Coast person. And
how important is it for the Pac-12? Yeah, how important is it for the Pac-12 to get a team in the playoff? I mean, you've had Mariota win a game, like you mentioned. Oregon beat Florida State, lost in the inaugural college football playoff to Ohio State. And then I believe I'm correct in that Washington is the only other Pac-12 team to be in the playoff, and they lost to Alabama in a game in Atlanta, if I remember correctly, something like 24-7. I was
You're correct.
For that one. But otherwise, there hasn't been much Pac-12 success in the playoffs. So how important is it if Utah gets to 12-1 to be able to get a team in?
You know, I think it would be good for the Pac-12, you know, important. You know, the Pac-12 has gigantic problems that a college football playoff berth would not solve. You know, even if Utah went and won the whole thing. You know, which I think they're capable of doing. I mean, they're that special of a football team, and they're playing at that high of a level right now. But the Pac-12 has two major problems that I've talked about for years. USC is very mediocre, which is not good enough for anybody on the East Coast to pay enough attention to SC or who they're playing, which is what brings attention to West Coast football. And their TV deal is a bad deal. They don't have the distribution. They tried to make their own network as opposed to go in business with a NBC or a Fox or an ESPN like these other networks that are thriving. The only one that's not thriving is the one that tried to do it for themselves, and that's the Pac-12 network. So those are their two major problems, you know, and those aren't going to be solved by, you know, a month of good football by Kyle Whittingham's Utah Utes. I will say this, though. The last couple times the Utes have roared, And they weren't championship games, but they were big-time bowl games. You know, was Urban Meyer and Kyle Whittingham. Urban Meyer beat Pitt, I think, in a BCS game, and then Kyle Whittingham beat Alabama, and we all remember that. And so maybe, you know, they're ready for the stage, but I don't think that would be enough for the conference.
As we move forward with SC, like if you were now doing an over-under, going back to SC to put you in an even more depressed mood and everybody else out there on Friday morning starting off with us, if you were breaking down the likelihood of how many more years now Clay Helton is at SC, are we having this exact same conversation come November of next year and everybody's talking about Clay Helton like they have been for the past 2 years, or does this vote of confidence, as it were, with a new athletic director and a new school president, mean that Clay Helton is secure for a couple of years?
I don't know. I mean, Let me ask you this. Let's say, because they're probably going to lose Graham Harrell, which a lot of people are worried about, but I don't think much of their air raid offense in the first place, as you know, or its ability to develop players. But they're probably going to lose Graham Harrell. So let's say you, Clay Travis, are not just a hot sports pundit and a culture shaper, but you're a hot offensive coordinator. You want to go work for Clay Helton? Does that feel like it's a secure job?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't. And the same thing I would say, by the way, about being a recruit. If I'm a top recruit, why in the world would I go play for Clay Helton right now when he's on perpetual hot seat status, when there are tons of other really locked in coaches that I feel good about the fact that they're going to be there for years to come? I don't want to sign with a guy and then have him be gone a year later and I have to restart with somebody else. I mean, I think that's a big issue.
Chip Kelly's going to have that problem now in year three. You know, we've seen a lot of coaches, you know, this has been a problem at USC for years because Clay Helton has never seemed stable. I mean, that's the thing that's offensive to me. You know, you see these media people that want to lick balls all the time, and they, you know, they send tweets like, you know, Clay's the right guy. You know, he might not be the best guy, but he's the right guy.
Right.
It's like, if he was the right guy, why would we have this conversation every year? You know, he's clearly not the right guy. I mean, we literally have this conversation every single damn year. He's not the right guy. You know, say whatever you want to say. He's their guy that they can control and keep their country club and keep their blue-blooded well, at least keep up the they remind me of like an old house in England that's like breaking down and the people inside still think they're aristocrats and they're all going crazy and slowly growing old.
Yeah.
And Clay Helton is their stooge that, you know, can run out there and they can keep their illusion of their aristocratic blue-blooded football life. It really is sad. It's unbelievable to watch it take place, and I don't like watching the media complicit with it.
Outstanding stuff as always, Petros Papadakis. Enjoy the game tonight. Thanks for getting up early with us again. AM 570 LA Sports at The Old P on Twitter if you want to find him there. We'll talk to you next week.
Enjoy the beach house and your beach East Coast life.
That would be fantastic, except I'll be down in Atlanta watching the SEC title game, so there's no beach there. Good stuff as always.
Hold that tiger.
Hold that tiger indeed. All right, when we come back, we'll dive into and I will give you my college conference title game gambling picks. All that still to come. Hopefully get you rich. This is Outkick on Fox Sports Radio.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com and within the iHeartRadio app.